Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
If you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free Show on 3CR at 1 p.m. every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but and I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, Stories of Recovery from Addictive Behaviour, Thursdays at 1 p.m. on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to centre myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that sovereignty over this land was never ceded. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Today, the focus is on Al-Anon family groups. Al-Anon is a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. Al-Anon believes that alcoholism is a family disease and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. This week, I'm joined by Tamara, who is a member of Al-Anon. Welcome, Tamara.
Hello, everybody, and hi, Anne.
It's great to have you on the show. Tamara is zooming in from New South Wales and made contact initially with Bill, the co-host of this show, or the main host of this show, just after the pandemic, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, when things were still all on Zoom. So we're going to have a chat to Tamara about her story of coming to Al-Anon. I'm being a member of Al-Anon. But before we start, we'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. So, Tamara, let's go back to where it all began for you. Could you tell us a little bit about your early family life?
Yes. Hello, everybody. I grew up in Sydney. My mum is from Germany and my dad is Australian. So I have one younger sister. She's 2 years younger than me and we are best friends. She's awesome. I love her a lot. I grew up bilingual. So I went to a German school where I spoke German at home and I had a nanny and I spoke English with her after school. So when my dad walked into the room, we would speak English. And then if he walks out of the room, we speak German. So my brain works on both languages, which was, I didn't realize what I was doing at the time. But, you know, it was interesting growing up with the German culture because the German school was as if somebody had just taken a school in Germany and put it into Australia. So I had a little bit of a hard time after school, like, doing outside school activities, adjusting to Australian culture, which, yeah, I don't know. It was just a very odd experience. And then I left that school in year five.
I'm very interested in that odd experience. Oh. So what was the difference in the two cultures in the two schools?
Yeah, so the German curriculum is much more difficult than Australian school systems. They place a lot more academic pressure on you. And I am yet to work harder than I did in year four in maths. It was really intense. Like the standard of education is much higher than in Australia. And then when I went to an Australian school in year five, we were like scrapbooking and doing finger painting. And I had previously sat in a room and had been doing like long equations by hand on paper. I also had to learn converting from Deutsche Mark to Euros at the same time as well. And I also had to learn Old German and I guess modern German at the same
Really?
time.
To little kids, they're teaching old German? Interesting.
So it was quite intense. I also went to a pretty strict Catholic church as well that was in German, so and half of it was also had quite a big Latin element. My mum did it so that we, stay connected to the culture, and I am appreciative of that. Like I really understand German culture. I have no issue understanding it at all. I feel very connected to it. Even now, I don't really have a use for German, but I'm still waiting to figure out what my bilingual skills are for. But yeah, no, it was definitely interesting.
And was there any alcoholism in your family of origin?
So I guess I had a little bit of a different experience to what I've seen. So I'm a bit younger than most people in Al-Anon, and my grandmother was the alcoholic, and my mum is the Al-Anon, the child of an alcoholic. So she then I'm, I guess, the next generation down. So I have a adult child mother and a Al-Anon characterized mother, and I'm not quite sure about my dad. I'm yet to figure that one out. But they both don't drink at all, really. They said they had enough fun before I was born. So
So that was the end of the fun when you
that
were
was that was the end of that. And I've heard off different family members that my grandma had. Definitely, she was an alcoholic. She had a pain medication addiction. She died of lung cancer when my mum was 14. And my mum went through like a, she had five siblings and she had like a lot of abandonment issues from that. My uncle is a daily drinker. He actually died last week of a alcohol-induced stroke and throat cancer, which has all been quite heavy. And yeah, it's just been very hard watching the family navigate that. And none of them being in recovery. Just seeing, a lot of mistakes on hurting everyone's feelings and just not handling it well. And everyone is just a large child. And I'm finding a lot of responsibilities getting thrust on my shoulders, which I'm finding very odd. But I guess more on that
How
later.
old are you?
I'm 31. I turned 31
Oh, you're
on Saturday.
31. Oh, it's 30. Well, the older I get, the younger people look. I thought you might be 10 years younger than that.
Oh, thank you.
Does your mother talk much about the impact of her grandmother's alcoholism on her?
So she holds my grandma in really high regard. She has, just switched all bad memories off. She just doesn't like the smell of beer. But my other aunts and my other uncle are quite open about how difficult it was. So I've gotten more information off my aunts and my uncles. And also she was in Germany during World War II. And her, so was my granddad, and all the trauma involved there.
We've had a lot of people on the show who'd really describe that they're still dealing with the trauma of World War II, which is amazing, isn't it, to think?
It's really quite intense. Like my mum, she loves to hoard jars of food. Like if she goes to the shop, she can't buy like one jar of tomato sauce. It's like 15. It's quite intense. And has a hard time letting things go. And then I sometimes have a hard time letting things go.
So would you do you think that there's been that you've absorbed some of that trauma from the
For sure.
alcoholism and the war?
Yeah, for sure. Like I don't personally drink because I made a few decisions in my drinking career that I wasn't particularly impressed with. So I made a choice 4 years ago to not drink either. And I've sort of found it a little bit hard at the start, but now it's been 4 years. It's not that hard anymore. I've moved on from that. But I can see addictive patterns in my behavior as well. I'm just lucky that I came to the program so young.
Can you describe some of the addictive patterns? Because this will be interesting for someone listening who is a little bit removed from the primary problem, but is still wondering what's wrong with them.
For sure. Okay, like I addictive patterns. I like fixate on things. Like I get really excited by certain things. If I am in drinking scenarios, I like to take it. I wouldn't say I've taken it too far, but I like to take the activities too far. Like I'm just here for a good time and a long time. And yet towards the end, I was also starting to black out. The first time I blacked out, I was 25. And I gave a speech at my best friend's engagement party, and I can't remember doing it. And then the next day, she said there were such beautiful words, and I don't know what I said.
If it wasn't recorded or anything.
No idea. So that's sort of when I started to think that might be a problem. And I also have quite a few issues with relationships, like friend relationships. I have a lot of issues with, and I think the other thing I really like mainly struggle with having an Al-Anon, an adult child mother, is that she would take. I guess I wasn't given the opportunity to take much responsibility for myself. So she tried to fix everything, tried to, deal with everything for me, and I guess deprived me of the opportunity to try those things and learn from my mistakes and grow up myself. So I've been in the program for 3 years now, and these 3 years have been quite tough trying to grow up on my own, like financially disentangle myself from them. I guess like learn how to be a functioning adult, keep my room tidy, pay my taxes, register a car. Like they would just do all of that for me, which, that's really great. But also it gets to a point where you need to be able to do that yourself. And it is hard when, somebody's saying, oh, I'll do it for you. Like, great, I don't want to do it. But, that's part of growing up. And I guess, finding that balance of growing up and finding that skill set and the resources and not feeling like I'm completely useless and like a just constantly feeling like a 14-year-old child in an adult body with an adult job and adult responsibilities just being completely useless. It's been quite a tough learning curve, but it's gotten easier. Like it's just practice really.
And has it been painful emotionally because of fear of hurting your mum's feelings? Because you know that this comes from love and on her part as well as anxiety.
No, I was quite resentful of her when I got to the program. I really had nothing nice to say about her. But I worked the steps, and by the time I got to step 9, I could see my part in it. And I could see the damage that I'd caused from my behavior and how I guess like I had what my part and what I'd done and how I'd hurt her. And I can now honestly say that I love her so much. Like I found the love that I wish my mum could give me off other members in the program, and that's helped me to not want anything from her anymore. So I can just be there for her, and we can have, we have quite a few boundaries. We've got a few rules and regulations, but that makes our relationship really healthy now. We can actually have a conversation for more than an hour without getting mad at each other. Like she's quite reactive, I'm quite reactive, and just being able to, work through some things and discuss some things. And yeah, it's just been a real privilege to have a completely different relationship, but it's a really healthy one. Like I used to call her maybe between 3 and 5 times a day, like just call her to talk to her on my way to work, at work, on my way home. I'd be texting her all the time, and that's not a healthy relationship as an adult to have with your parents.
Too enmeshed.
Very enmeshed. So I don't know if you want me to start talking about how I got to the program, or we can.
That's okay. We'll have a little break, and we'll be right back.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, when are we going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here?
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we gonna move on over you.
Yillaman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Vargas Blues Band, led by Javier Vargas, is an influential blues rock band formed in Spain in 1991.
It's the 2001 blues, baby.
With 8 platinum discs for sales records and collaborations with international artists, Vargas, known as the King of Latin Blues, delivers passionate performances that blend rock, blues, soul, jazz, flamenco and Latin rhythms.
Trevor's gonna find you, no matter what you do.
The band will perform live in Melbourne on Sunday, March 23, at the Brunswick Ballroom. Tickets available from robelspromoters.com.
Somebody please tell me,
yeah. Robles Promoters is a 3CR supporter.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone or email. We're talking today with Tamara, who's a member of Al-Anon and has an interesting story of being slightly removed from the primary alcoholic, if you can, to coin a phrase, which is her grandmother, was her grandmother, and how that the trauma of that and to some extent the trauma of the Second World War has sort of been passed down generations via Tamara's mother to Tamara. So that's quite interesting. So what can I, is your mother in a program? Does she go to Al-Anon herself?
No, she doesn't. I would like it if she did, but she does not. Yeah. So sometimes I sort of weave some very basic concepts into her day and when we talk and she's like, wow, that's groundbreaking information, such as one day at a time.
Uh-huh.
So, but no, she's not really open to that. And that's okay. I'm accepting her where she's at.
Good. And you talked before about how your uncle's lost his life because of this disease. And you said that you're watching the family dynamic and the drama playing out around that. And I'm very familiar with that. And there's nothing like a death or a funeral to bring out everybody's stuff that's been pressed down for years or not. What have you noticed in people's behavior without mentioning names or anything?
Yeah, of course. I've noticed like my mum, she's kind of she was the one who, even though she's the second youngest, she's taken on a lot of care responsibility in the family of other family members. Like she looked after my granddad. So she's the executor of my uncle's will, so she's kind of the matriarch of the family. I don't know if that's because she's the most competent one or the most reasonable, I don't know, but that's sort of her position. And I guess watching different family members thinking they're making the right decision about some things and it's not, and it affects everyone, and you know, how do we split up the will, blah blah blah. Next week we have a sort of a ceremony. Well, so she's sending the his ashes and his belongings from the home, like he was in a long-term palliative care home, to my workplace, because she, you know, we kind of decided would be best to go to me because I'm sort of the next responsible one. Fine, that's great, that's what I'm here for, to be responsible and to be of service. But yeah, it's been interesting. And then on Tuesday coming week we're having a little sort of semi-funeral type thing with some of her siblings. Some can't make it, so we have to keep the ashes for next year, and it's all a bit messy, but I mean, they're all going to try their best. I imagine it's going to be quite a tense day, but because and I have a few resentments for one particular family member, but I'm just trying to, you know, that's not my business. I'm just there to be of service to my mom. And that's the thing that I've learned in Al-Anon. Like, it's not all about me. And I can just be there for her.
Mm-hmm. So tell us the story now then of how you came to be in Al-Anon, but don't take us straight to the moment when you're outside the door. Tell us. What was the lead up?
Yeah, okay, So obviously, as mentioned, there's a bit of codependence that's been happening. So I left school, I dropped out of school because I was really sick. So I didn't finish high school. And I had chronic fatigue. And so I thought that was like a physical response. And so I battled chronic fatigue. I was bedridden for a year and a half. Then I started to get better just through, I guess, you know, lowering my stress, exercising, eating healthy. It finally started to sort of relieve itself. Then I went to TAFE, and the TAFE career advisor sort of said, I think you need to go to uni. Like, obviously, I've got some stuff going on with your mom. Have you thought about moving state to go to a different uni? And he suggested I move up to Queensland. And I already thought, before I'd even gotten to the uni, there's an aeroplane between us. Perfect. So we, as a teenager, my mum described me as having an attitude problem, which I find so funny because that's what we talk about in Al-Anon, having changed attitudes. And yeah, so she would send me away in the holidays to a farm with no phone reception for a week. I'd get like one or two phone calls. There was a lot of other kids there. There was some normal kids, some behavioural issues kids, and I would just work on a farm. You'd ride horses in the morning, do cattle work in the afternoon, and I just thought, there's got to be a way to make money doing this. This is amazing.
Oh, so you enjoyed that?
Yeah, so I ended up going to uni and studying agriculture in Queensland. So, yeah, the thought of getting on a plane and having a plane between us, we just argued and argued and argued. Like, she just could not understand me, and I did not want to understand her. So, yeah, her communication style is very aggressive, abrupt, and, I mean, she's German, so there's that to too. Quite direct and explosive, like not much emotional regulation. So I think you either go one or two ways. You either are reacting or you're retreating. So my sister retreated. She also had a lot of issues, and I was a reactor. So my mom, she would confiscate my phone, my iPod, my laptop, my friends, my CDs. And I would react, and I would scream back at her. I would confiscate her jewelry. I would hide everything of her stuff. I was like, who can play this game, lady?
Yeah, so yeah. She took on more than she could.
I was awful. I did not make it easy for her. But because I was like, you're not, like, we just weren't understanding each other. And so, yeah, I thought, great, let's put some space between us. Perfect. Solution to the problem. So anyway, I was up there for 5 years. I was really battling still my fatigue. It was really hard getting through uni. Had a bunch of flare-ups. I was completely financially dependent on them, my parents, because, like, I couldn't work. I don't even know how I got through uni. Like, that to me is still a miracle because it was so difficult. And then I left uni and I thought everything was going to be amazing and easy and my problems were solved, and I'd move back to Sydney, live in an apartment, have a cool city girl job, and I would have kids by 30 and everything's great. And that's unfortunately did not happen. I still really battled with my fatigue. I could barely work. I didn't think I could actually have a real job. You know, like, I'm obviously 25 at this point, so there was a sense of time to grow up energy happening, and I just could not do it. It was so difficult. Every day was just such a slog, like, could not manage myself. I just didn't have, like, the skills, I guess, just basic skills. Like, I could cook, but I didn't want to cook, and I couldn't keep my room tidy, and it's just, like, a lot of just basic things that my parents would just do for me that I just wasn't doing for myself. And then, yeah, I got my dream job, which I have at the moment. It was a huge responsibility, huge opportunity, and I just thought, this is, like, things are a bit serious now. So it took me 2.5 years to get this job.
In agriculture?
In agriculture. Right. Yeah. So it was, yeah, really exciting. It was, yeah, a job that is made of dreams, and I was so happy and excited, and it just really came to show when I got that job that I did not have the skill sets required to grow up and have an adult job. So I really struggled through that.
Have you still got the exhaustion though? Are you still tired half the time?
Yeah, so let me get to that. So I had my little assortment of choices that I made, and then I thought, okay, if you want to keep this job, you cannot keep drinking. So I chose the job, stopped drinking, stopped going out all the time, stopped having 3-day hangovers, Took that was sort of the first time I started taking responsibility for myself. And then in February 2022, I met this lovely man. We went on a date, and Adam, then he invited me over and he cooked me dinner. And he said, I need to tell you something. I'm an alcoholic and I'm in recovery. I'm in AA. And to me, I was like, you beauty, you don't drink. Sounds like we have it together. And he didn't. And that's okay. Anyway, so we started dating. We got along really well. And yeah, pretty early on into dating, he's like, there's something wrong with your family. There's something wrong here. And I was like, yeah, I couldn't put my finger on what was wrong, but I knew there was dysfunction. And then, yeah,
hang
he
on,
started.
Hang on, sorry. You're thinking there's something wrong with his family or the other way
around?
No,
with my family.
He's
saying,
saying to you,
wrong.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, there's something wrong, but I don't know what. And then I had to drop back down to working 4 days a week because my fatigue was so bad. And I was like, this is unmanageable. Like, and every time he spoke anything about 12 step, I was like, this is incredible. Like, wow, life-changing stuff.
So he just said, he sounded just like he had the wisdom of the ages.
One time he said to me, I don't know if you love me or if you love 12 step more. And that was before I'd gone to the gone to any meeting. So he started taking me to AA meetings and I was like, oh, this sounds good, but like not exactly my problem. So then we went on our first holiday together, which was a AA roundup in Lightning Ridge.
Okay.
So like far west of New South Wales. He was like, yeah, it's like 3 days of AA meetings. There'll be an Al-Anon meeting. I think you should go. And then we were out in Lightning Ridge. He took me to my first Al-Anon meeting, and there was a woman who stood up, and she'd been in the program for 50 years at that point. And it just all clicked in my head. I have no idea what she was saying, but it just like the puzzle pieces fell into place, and I was like, okay, this is the problem. Like, this is the issue. And then, yeah, a lot of stuff started shifting for me on that holiday. And we came home, and then we hadn't been living together yet, but then he moved in, after our 5 day holiday, 'cause we said that was so much fun. Let's make it a holiday forever. And then, he did say a proviso for our relationship was that I do a meeting a day. So quick, smart. I was like, okay. So I started doing meetings.
Is he doing a meeting a day, or is he just?
Yeah, he was doing a meeting
a day.
He's got
high standards for himself, aren't you?
Same rules for him were the same for me. So he said straight away, get a sponsor, start doing outreach, meeting a day, work the steps. Like, don't talk to me till you've done your morning routine. Like, very super strict. And he literally was like, do it or we're done. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. So, yeah, I started going to meetings. I'm crying like crazy. Like, I'm yet to see someone wailing as much as I did. I was slobbering everywhere. You know, where I met Bill, I was just slobbering in that meeting whilst he was in an AA meeting across the road. I'm on a Zoom call. It was very messy. Yeah, everyone was so nice to me. And then this one woman, I was even doing meetings whilst I was at work because I realized I was like, I cannot function. Like, I need these meetings to sort me out and I can't live like this. The reality kicked in quite quickly for me. And then what happened? Oh, then I messaged this woman. I said, how do I get a sponsor? And she said, I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, perfect. No work for me. Great. I remember the first thing she said to me was, you have a lot of drama in your life. Can you sort that out, please? I didn't even know what that meant. And so I thought, okay, leave it with me. So I bought all the books, started all the reading, and then we sort of figured out the issue was with my family. And so she suggested I go no contact with them for 3 months and see what happens. And that was so difficult, like just understanding how enmeshed we were and how much my family relied on me. They didn't understand why I was doing it, what the point of it was. Had I joined a cult or a religion? Like, no, I had not. I thought my boyfriend was the devil because he's done this to me.
Controlling you or something.
Yeah. And through those 3 months, I could untangle and unwrap everything and start finding myself, and it was really difficult. I guess the no contact, they really struggled with it. Like, my dad was calling me every week. My mum was pretty good. My sister and I had a falling out already, so we just kind of didn't talk to each other. And then, yeah, my dad's best friend's dad died. So then he called me crying one day, and that's sort of how it kind of ended. And my sponsor was with me through all of it. I was still doing a meeting a day. And I sort of had to redefine what our relationship was. I had to teach them what was acceptable and unacceptable behavior. So, I started off with having to do an outreach call, then a 10-minute call with my family, and then another outreach call and a meeting before I could talk to them and like maintain any level of sanity, because it was just
Right.
so difficult to talk to them.
Yeah.
And then slowly it's gotten quite a bit easier. Anyway, then whilst we were no contact, I also broke up with my boyfriend because it was just too difficult with both of us in early recovery. It was just so messy. Like I just had too much to sort out. And he was right in ending it because, yeah, he did give me the greatest gift, which was my recovery. So I'm still very grateful to him for that. I don't talk to him now. It was really hard breaking up. It was really tough. I felt so confused and alone. But yeah, the lovely people in Al-Anon were there for me. And yeah, it's just given me the greatest gift on earth. So I'm very grateful for the program.
Like so many community organizations, we need your continued financial support to keep 3CR on air and our community connected and strong.
Consider selecting Auto Renew for your subscription so your subscription keeps rolling on every year.
We love the security of knowing we have your support into the future.
Head to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377 and remember to select recurring for your annual subscription.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps towards a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1300-AA-AA-AA. That's 1300-22-22-22 or visit aa.org.au.
This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. And we are talking with Tamara about recovery from the effects of being close to someone affected by alcoholism. What did you come to understand about your family during that no contact period and then and also in Al-Anon?
Yeah, that was, I think, the hardest part of the whole process was just seeing how enmeshed we were and how, like, I wasn't even having my own thoughts. They weren't my own voices in my head. They were all my family's judgments and perceptions. They weren't mine. And that was really hard to reconcile because I would be thinking, like, I would have my own thoughts, and then I would have, thoughts from my family, and I couldn't identify my own personality out of all of that. So that was really hard to have that all of a sudden switch off and then realize where my thoughts were with everything and how sick my thinking was going to meetings and understanding how heavily I had been affected by alcoholism when I wasn't even in a home with active alcoholism. Yeah, that was quite.
Can I just ask you why the sponsor suggested the no contact? Because that suggests that they must have felt that it wasn't good for you, that you needed to really do that to detach properly?
Yeah, it was definitely a detachment thing. I mean, my sponsor, she's incredible. She's been in the program for over 30 years. She's in multiple programs, so I trust she. I'm yet to meet someone who works the program as hard as she does.
She knows how it works.
She's incredible. I truly hit the jackpot with her. So I just do what she says because I know she yeah. might know a few things more than I do.
Yes.
And if she doesn't know, she suggests I do more outreach about it, which I do.
So she says go and not talk to someone else. Or
Yeah. Go do a survey, see what you can find.
And what do you put? You said that you just really cried a lot when you started coming to the meetings. What do you think that was? What was coming out?
It was just like I just really felt like the whole time growing up, I was like, this just cannot be it. Like, this is awful. Where are the instructions? Like, for life, like, how are people doing this? I don't know what to do. Like, I just felt so helpless, hopeless, useless. Like, you know, I'm going through the motions of university, but and you know, renting and being, you know, doing the things, but I'm like, this is not great, I will say. And I pretty much walked into Al-Anon and I was like, oh, sweet, there's a book, there's instructions, there's steps. The steps are the answers to everything, which they are. If you get stuck, like, there's just, I was like, oh, there's a formula to this. And I guess applying it to literally everything works so well because, yeah, I just didn't have the framework to get through anything.
So would you say your parents or at least your mum was not only controlling everything that you did, but also by overtly or covertly suggesting that was because you were incompetent yourself, that they would be able to do it better?
Yeah, I wouldn't say she thought that I was incompetent, but it was just very much that I didn't have the right answer. If that makes sense.
You were making mistakes, according to her.
She just couldn't sort of tame me or like put me in a box. And she really struggled with that because I'm quite a unique personality and I'm quite myself and I'm very comfortable with myself. But a lot of people, and not just my family, like a lot of school friends and stuff, and even at uni tried to tear me down for being myself. Like, people find it quite threatening that I'm quite uniquely myself. And quite loudly confident and happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really hard for me too, like having a lot of people say things to me after a while, I would believe it. Like, I'm not, just like a classic one, I'm not good enough. But inside I thought I was good enough, but then everyone around me told me I wasn't. So maybe I wasn't good enough. So I really struggled making that connection with myself. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's just been so beautiful doing Al-Anon and finding myself again.
Mm-hmm. So what take us to your first meeting? What happened in there?
Yes, I was very, very delicately. The first meeting, I couldn't find the entrance. So I left. I ended up going to Coles and buying like 15 different shower gels. I don't know what that was about.
15 shower gels, right? Yeah.
And then I got home and I cried and I apologized to my boyfriend. I was like, I'm so sorry, I couldn't find the entrance. Like, now we're going to break up. He's like, relax, tomorrow's another day. We will try again. it was a bit too stressful that week, so we let it go. And then the following week he delivered me to my first meeting, walked me in the door, sat me down, put the blanket on me. He's like, toodaloo, I'm going to my meeting. See you later. And so, I mean, obviously at the time it was super frightening, but yeah, there was only four people there. They were all so nice. I had no idea what I was doing. And then I just went to that meeting, and then Tuesday I went to another meeting, Wednesday I went to another meeting. And then, yeah, after work, we had sort of found a schedule of things, how we would, you know, manage his meetings, because he did in-person meetings as well and my meetings. We had a pretty good rhythm, and then, yeah, we broke up and I just kept going because I didn't know what else to do. And then I've settled down quite a bit. So now I do less meetings, but they're still there and I still go regularly.
Mm-hmm. And what did you hear at the first meeting or early on? What sort of you already had some ideas, didn't you, because your boyfriend had talked to you. What did you grab onto that you loved?
Yeah. Ooh. I know people say that the first things they hear is the slogans, but I didn't hear that. I heard steps, books, outreach call, sponsor, and I was like, okay, how do I work this as intensely as possible? But I was getting a HD in that.
You were going to do it properly.
I was doing this correctly because I had seen and heard my boyfriend share and what he'd been through, and I just thought, if this guy can do that, I can do this. I pretty much was at my rock bottom. I was like, this is just terrible. Living is just not great. And I really felt like that their meetings had the instructions, the people's, they had what I wanted. They had serenity, they had calmness. There was no chaos. Everything was so structured. Nobody was getting angry. It was so polite and easy. So I just kept going back, and yeah, I would sit in meetings and people, I know so many people talk about it. It's like just the relief you feel going in the, afterwards. Like your mind just feels like there's just been a little bit of, like my brain's been cleansed of all the anxiety.
Massaged a little bit.
And yeah. Settled down. Yeah. And you just leave and you're like, oh, that's better. I can handle it again.
So, all right, tell us, I don't know what language you just used. I think you said this is the instructions or this is the answers or something.
Yeah, instructions.
Instructions. Okay. What are the instructions?
What are the instructions? What do I do? I mean, I can be quite argumentative still and quite opinionated, so I try not do that. I try not pick up the rope. I try not to antagonize people and make the situation worse. I try to, what else do I do? So I wake up in the morning. I'll run you through my day. I wake
That's
up in
the way.
I open my eyes and I do a reading out of whatever, Courage to Change, ODAT, whichever one I'm feeling at the time. Then I do a meditation, and then I do a little bit of journaling, but I journal what I've read that day in the book on what's happened, like how does this apply to my life, so that I'm always keeping it present in my mind and trying to keep working it. Then I start my day. I try and, you know, I have a different relationship with my higher power than most people. And my higher power, I never had a problem with, you know, having a connection with my higher power. I've always believed in it. So my higher power visits me. And I guess that kind of the way I see it is like, if I wouldn't go as far to say as saying that, like, if I behave, but if I work the program and I work the program in a very honest way, then I get little rewards. Like my higher power visits me and gives me these really special, like, I guess I get a lot of relief. I get a lot of answers. A lot of things end up working out quite easily. It's definitely not me who's doing it. That's how I know it's my higher power doing it.
So when you get that flood of relief and peace come over you, you go, that's the higher power.
Yeah. It also helps me work through a lot of things. Like it makes it quite clear for me quite quickly about how things are and why things are happening in my life and the way they're happening and what is the solution to not feel the way I'm feeling, which has been amazing. And then I usually do an outreach call every day.
To your sponsor or to just
to no, just to my large roster of friends, who I like to call. And then, yeah, I call my sponsor once a week just to check in with what I'm doing. If I'm doing step work, to go over the step work, if I need to do a step 4 or a step 9, and figure that stuff out. And then, yeah, I do a meeting once or twice a week. And then afterwards I do some fellowship and I try and organize to see people outside of Al-Anon, people outside of Al-Anon as well, to do other activities.
Coffee or something.
Yeah, just to keep really engaged with the program. And then I've also done some fellowship as well. I've been a GR, been a treasurer, and now I'm helping another group set up their online bank account.
What do you get? What sort of recovery comes from doing that sort of service for a group?
Yeah, so people say that the answers are in the program, and they really are. It's just such a great training ground to practice all these skills that I sort of have lacked. So as an example, I took on the GR role because I really thought that that was the least I could do for this one group.
That's a group representative, right?
Yeah, the least I could do. And so then having the responsibility of communicating, you know, things at an intergroup level and organising other things and managing conflicts within the group, it gave me a lot of confidence to be able to handle it outside of work, as well as having to share in meetings all the time. Meant that I really have no fear of public speaking anymore, or presenting. In fact, my job requires me at times to do quite some intense public speaking in front of some very serious people. And I just have no problem at all doing that because it's so easy, because I'm just talking about my job, not about my honest problems.
Your deepest worries.
Yeah. So, no. And also, like, learning how to be a nice person and how to be considerate of others, that's been such a gift. And a lot of my friends say to me now, like, that all the stuff that I've been working on and all this change, some know I'm in the program, some don't. It's just if they've sort of stumbled upon me doing some group work, then I sort of tell them. But yeah, I saw a lot of them over Christmas and they all said that that the change in me has been so beautiful to watch, that all the parts that they love about me are so much louder and all the things that were difficult, that's not so much there at all, which, you know, that makes me feel like I'm obviously doing the right thing.
Yeah, it's such a relief. In my experience, it's been such a relief to know that whatever the situation is, I don't have to fix it, whatever, you know, just in general, in social life, places or in work, that I don't necessarily have to fix it. But, I mean, I may have something to contribute to help with it, but I don't have to get all enmeshed in it and then
charge
of it. Yeah,
definitely helped too. And I also think, like, a really, especially in work environments, it's really helped to think about giving people the privilege to try and the honour to fail.
The privilege to try and the honour to fail. Yep.
Because it is an honor to fail, because you've been given an opportunity and you can stuff it up.
Yeah.
And, like, it's an honor to fail and to try and figure it out. Like, it's such a privilege to try.
There's
really
humility
helps.
In that, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What's your experience been of the step four? The step four is taking an inventory of your character shortcomings. What should that been like for you?
It's been incredible. So my step four, my sponsor, she lives quite a few hours away. So the first time I met her, we met sort of halfway in, like, a little group setting with everyone in that meeting. So I met all these lovely old ladies and we went to lunch. It was amazing. And then a couple months later, she invited me over for a few days to her house. And she said, "Do you mind if one of my oldest and bestest friends in the program comes too?" I was like, "Oh, that's a bit intense. Do I have to tell everyone my secrets?" But it was so special to have these two really experienced ladies sit me down, and we just started. We did the AA method with the columns, and we just started, and it was so painful, but I just had these two women literally sitting right next to me, hands on my shoulders, being like, "You can do it. It's okay. Just start." And it was, it was so empowering having them be there for it. And then I worked through them, and then I figured out my belief systems, and I thought, "Oh, is that it?" Like, I just thought it would be a little bit more intense than what it was. And then once I sort of identified them, I could see how these beliefs are just affecting everything I do. And now if I'm feeling a little bit upset about how something is going, I can just sort of, really doesn't take me long. I just sit with it. I'm like, "Well, what belief system is this triggering?" And it's just like, "Oh, well, that's it." And then I can move on from it, because I know, like, it's just a reaction to old behavior, not actually something to be upset over. So, yeah, it's been really special.
And what about the bit where this is my weakest point, the bit where you have to make amends?
Yeah, that was tough. I made an amends to a couple of my friends, and I made an amends to my mum, where I took responsibility as I'd mentioned some of my bad behaviour as a teenager, made amends for that.
So you said you made it direct amends? You said
direct amends, had her down, told her what I did, where I took responsibility, where I wasn't my best. Did the same with my dad. And I guess, you know, because I am so young, I have the opportunity to make a living amends with them, which yes. I am doing. And that's, you know, that requires quite a bit of humility.
Absolutely.
To not jump in on old behavior, to not engage in my old behavior, to keep my boundaries really firm with them. And you know what? It's like, it's just so different now, but it is so much better. It's so much easier. I went from not being able to talk to my parents for more than 10 minutes and needing all that support, as I'd mentioned, to being able to go on two holidays this year with them for 10 days in a caravan.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, and no arguments, nothing, no problems, nothing at all.
Going back to the moment where you, or the time when you made amends, what was their reaction? What was your mother's reaction to that?
I mean, my mum just cried. She did not think that I would ever say those words. I didn't expect anything from her, because I was like, well, it's my amends. It's the mess I made. And I just, you know, part of it was to vow that I would never behave that way again. And I haven't. And then, yeah, she took it pretty well. Since then, our relationship has been much better. I feel like that's really cleared up quite a bit for us. And then my dad, I kept it quite short and succinct with him. I sort of said, oh, sorry about all the stuff I did when I was a teenager and in my 20s. And then he just said, what about your 30s?
Like, oh, he just made a joke.
So I said, okay, sorry for that too.
Yeah, and all the things I'm going to do in my 40s. Yeah, sorry for that.
He put his arm around me and he said, you're very easy to love. So that was, yeah, really special.
Wow. Well, yeah. we're going to end it there, Tamara. That's a really nice place to end it. So I feel you've really explained how this thing works and how stupidly simple it is in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
We just complicate everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much, Tamara, for coming and sharing your experience with us. If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon family groups, then you can phone them on 1300 252 2666. I'll say that again without the coughing. 1300 252 666 or go online at alanon.org.au. And there's meetings on every day of or night of the week in the big cities, and there's Zoom meetings all over the world that you can join. If there's any content in what you've just listened to that has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. We'll see you again next week. In the meantime, enjoy more radical radio with Balanoir. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.